Sound.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Talking Sound Podcast, the only podcast on the internet where negative 10 is a number to be desired, coming at you live from the throbbing heart of rock and roll, that is Austin, Texas. I am Chris Jordan, your host, and today on the Talking Sound Podcast, I am so entirely happy to have our guest on today. He's an old, long, good friend of mine. Ian Robbins from Maine is on with us, also known as the artist E-Gen. How you doing today, Ian?
Good. It's good to be here.
Fantastic, man. How have things been going?
They've been going pretty good. Just been busy working on pushing this album and get it out to as many people as I can. So,
well, and that's what we're here to talk about today is actually your new, the first breakout album as the artist E-Gen, volume one, Exaltation is the name of it. And like, I've known you for smooth a decade now. And when I met you, I lived in Maine. I worked as the audio engineer for your, progressive metal band, Project Seven with Nick McIntyre and Terry. And oh, it was fantastic. It was just like hardcore power rock and roll, man. Just trio wrecking it. And, well, great vocals, great lyrics, great music, visual experience. It was fantastic all the way around. And, even at that point you were talking about E-Gen, cause we talked a lot about electronic music together, things like that quite a bit. Explain a little bit to us and to the audience here, how it is that you came about with the project E-Gen. How did you come up with, I guess the alter ego that is E-Gen? Give us a little bit behind that and the album itself.
Well, I had always, back in the day, like back in the junior high school and back in probably about 7th and 8th grade, I used to play a lot of this game called Magic the Gathering. Nerds.
Nerds unite, son.
Yep. And I had a cousin who also played, and he one day called me E-Gen. And the relationship between that and Magic is the fact that they have these things on there called Gen.
Yes, that is correct.
And so pretty much he said that, you know, E-Gen, you know, so it was a play on words. And I thought that was funny. But the actual funny part, though, is that another friend of mine who doesn't know this cousin of mine had called me the same name, and I had never brought it up.
So oh, yeah?
That's kind of strange, you know. So I was like, I thought that I'd use that. I thought it was such a cool name, and I'd use that as the name of this project.
Yeah. And, you know, it's really wild to me to, number one, hear your music now, because you always had a certain style to me that was very edgy, very, very out there in what you were doing, somewhat experimental, but also at the same time, very rooted, very grounded, and very mathematical. You didn't do things just for the sake of doing them. And like I said, when I first heard about the artist E-Gen, when I first heard about this concept that you were doing in this album, was almost a decade ago. And not many people realize that sometimes, like, it takes that long to actively get something rolling, you know, to get the wheels churning, to you know, before you get buttermilk,
you
got to churn a lot.
My head out of my ass.
Yeah, well, that too. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, hey, everybody, I'm an engineer. He's a musician. We all have our head up our asses every once in a while, and we all need to get ass off shoulders and do something every once in a while. Like, for instance, there wasn't a whole lot of season two of this show because I was out on the road so much working, and I felt really bad. Like, first season had 52 episodes. Second season had like 11. It was like, what the dude, I love my show so much and I can't even be there for it. Like, I had launched Dudes and Beer But that was just audio and it was all live. So it was like, ah, there's no editing involved.
Right. You know, it's hard to make time. You know, you have all these things and you get sidetracked. And that's pretty much what happened was I had always had the ideas for Egin. Yeah. And I had wanted to place them all in different spots and whatnot. But I just had always gotten sidetracked pretty much and I didn't have the right gear at the time. And it took me a while to get the right gear that I needed.
It does. It takes quite, even with what you're seeing here, people come in and they're like, oh my God. But you know me, I'm a gearaholic. Like I almost started GA here in Austin, like Gearaholics Anonymous. If you're a dude like me and you can't stay off Craigslist and not buy like $30 things like once a week, you have a problem. I literally had to like break myself of the habit of checking Craigslist out of boredom.
All right.
And that's when you know it's like, okay, dude, we're getting a little loony now. It was one thing when I started Austin Hot Mods and I was buying a pedal a week to learn to modify and come up with designs. But we're 60 mods in now. I don't think I need to be buying 3 pedals a week.
Right. Well, speaking of, I want to check out some of your modulation pedals.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely have a look at some of those at some point.
I would say that the one for you would probably be the OC2.
OC2?
Yeah, the octave. Because I can do some really, really wild synth stuff with that makes it sound almost like an old school Atari or something like that.
That would be pretty dope.
It's cool stuff. But tell us a little bit about the birth of this album. Like we said, it takes a while to compile all this gear. This is all like bits and pieces from 2 different sound systems that I had and recording rigs and stuff. How long did it take you to conceptualize the album and to start actively taking to the microphone and hitting record? What was that process? Give us a little bit of the journey there, Ian.
Well, it was pretty frustrating, actually, because I had all these ideas and I had no high quality way to get them out, pretty much. So I was kind of actually, you know, like I'd post things on Facebook or whatever and be like, here's the, you know, idea that I have. Nobody knew what I was talking about.
Right.
I knew what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Nobody else did. So for years, probably a few years, I had mapped out how I want the volumes to go. So this is volume 1 of the Gin volumes. So I had kind of mapped out, I grouped a few songs together that I thought would go with a theme of volume 1. So I don't know, I would probably say like this particular volume took probably like 2 years just to get it finished. And that is mostly because I hadn't had the, I had to get the interface.
Yeah. You got to get bits and pieces to make things happen. And you do what you can while you can, before you get a microphone or anything like that for vocals, hey, you could track a whole album, a guitar instrumental.
No, absolutely.
You know, just with a mono interface, that's even just like an iRig. Like you don't even need like, it's impressive on what you can do with an iPad or an iPhone with an iRig nowadays in your guitar. It's crazy.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, even with recording and tracking, like it's HD quality audio and it's pretty impressive. I want to say the last Fish album, if I'm not mistaken, was entirely recorded on like the iPhone 6 or 5 something like that. Yeah. Like all like the backup vocal tracks, like there was one song that they recorded them like out in the middle of like Central Park, like on the headphones, like literally into the iPhone headphones. And that's how they recorded the background track. And it's like,
it's funny because if you were to go back 40 years, I mean, this would be out of the question.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, number one, we would never do that. Number two, the technology to be able to do that just did not exist.
Oh, I know.
And, you know, even now with digital tracking technology and the stuff coming out, you know, it's a constant learning curve. You know, you gotta stay ahead of the curve, man. I am by far not a digital engineer. Yeah, I got in the box software. I know how to use Pro Tools. edit stuff for broadcast and stuff like that. But man, for me to sit down and record a band the way I used to or something like that, like it's not for me. Even running live sound with them feels cold and sterile to me. Because I don't have as you can tell behind me, folks, I like the knobs. I like the cables. I like the patch bays. And you know.
And if you don't use it, you lose it, too.
Yeah,
like,
that's true. That's another thing I found. It is a reflex. And, yeah, you know, it was one thing because y'all released with the Project 7, y'all released your albums fairly close to each other with the LP and the EP. They were within a year of each other.
Right.
And like when you're on a roll like that, things just churn out.
Right.
You know, but as soon as you take like a good 6-7 month break.
Oh, I mean, you stop.
It's like just stretching after like a long afternoon nap.
You have to push that roll back up the hill again.
I just napped for 3 hours and I am just wiped out.
Yep. I mean, that's pretty much what it's like. I mean, even with recording this album, I would have moments where I would have a roll and then I'd stop and then it would take me forever to get back into doing it again.
Yeah.
So luckily I finally kicked myself in the ass to do it, you know, to actually finish it. So.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, with that, let's get a little bit into the first track that you sent us. Which is Born of Fire. That's what we came in with. And tell us a little bit about that, because it is very modern and edgy. It's got a lot of really driving guitar sound and stuff like that, which is your sound. I mean, that's what I've come to identify as Ian Robbins.
Nice.
And when I heard it was definitely one of those like, oh yeah. This is nice. Like, this is going somewhere.
That's cool because I didn't know I had a sound.
Yeah, but I mean, you got to remember, I was your engineer. Like,
yeah, exactly. So I was like, I don't even know. So I mean, that's cool.
Well, there are some distinctive rhythmic patterns that you use and stuff like that. You know, it's kind of like not spotting David Gilmour's held note. Like, there's only one dude that sustains a note that way, you know, like, or like Alex Lifeson's, you know, arpeggio, you know, like, he's the only dude that does that.
Yeah.
Or like that anyway.
Exactly.
And yeah, you know, it's a very distinct sound in this track. Tell us a little bit, what is the track about? Because it's right near the beginning of the album, correct?
Yeah. And I mean, going along with the theme of the album, which is kind of like esoteric, and you know, there's a little bit of tarot, like the song Three of Wands is like Three of Wands is a tarot card. So it has that kind of vibe to it. You know, not saying it's about that, but it just has that kind of unknown element to it throughout the whole album, you know.
So
I don't know how to really describe it.
Well, it's kind of hard to encapsulate something like that. True, but I mean, to me, it was definitely an opening salvo for the album. It was something that was that definitely told you it was not a soft start.
Right.
You know.
And it's funny because the first song is it's really ambient. There's no vocals at all. So, and it's a long, like 6.5 minute song.
Nice. Yeah.
And it just makes you sound like you're in a desert.
Yeah.
And it's called Oracle. That's the song before.
All right.
Born of Fire comes in.
Hold on. You're chopping out a little bit on me there, Ian.
Oh.
Sorry about that.
Oh, that's all right.
There we go. So tell us a little bit about Oracle again.
Okay, yeah. So Oracle starts things off with an ambient. It's really ambient. Sounds like you're in a desert.
Yeah.
It just has that kind of.
Oh no. We're losing your audio, buddy. There it is.
Okay.
It's weird. You keep coming in and out.
Yeah, it's, I mean, crazy. It's weird because the same thing happens when you're
talking. Yeah. It may just be a Skype lag.
It could be.
Yeah.
I'll continue.
Yes.
Born of Fire pretty much just snaps into the album. You know what I mean? Like, that's the first song is just kind of this ambient, like, it's not going to be a typical album, pretty much.
Yeah. I didn't hear any of that. Damn you, technology.
Technology.
It knows you're talking about it.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
We can't let this.
Yeah, it's like, I know what this dude actually thinks of me.
Right.
And what the veiled message behind the album is. It's avoid technology and get away from it.
Yeah.
But you know, I can't wait to hear quite a bit, because you released two tracks to me to be able to put up and let people listen to and stuff like that. And everybody can go on to E-Gin is how you spell it. It's not all one word, folks. You'll come up with some other things on the internet. Nothing crazy, nothing nasty. I did some Google stalking for you.
Because I didn't do
that. You didn't do any of that? Yeah. And that happens. That happens, you know.
Yeah.
I've had people want to start podcasts, and they give me a name, and I start searching it, and I'm like, oh, yeah, you don't want to use anywhere near that.
Right.
Even me with Austin Hot Mods, like, it went down one time.
I see where that could get.
Yeah, there was a porn site up in its place rapidly. It was like, oh, yeah, I guess I used the word mods and hot.
Yeah, Hot Mods, Austin.
But just for me, I can't wait to hear the rest of the album, because the two pieces that you sent me are so disparately different.
Right.
And like you said, coming in with Oracle and Three of Wands, things like that, that are far more on the instrumental side and on the softer synth side, more on the introspective realm of music that Ian Robbins does. And, you know, to say that you're just a metal musician or that you're just a metal guitarist would be a huge understatement. You play so many different things. And yeah, so many
and
different
I don't
styles.
I try to stay away from, like, from this first album, I had to get some of that stuff out of my system. I had to get some of that fast guitar and the distortion.
Well, yeah.
And I had to do that because the next album isn't going to be anything like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's going to be completely different than this, this first volume. So, I mean, I plan on doing a bunch of different types of, like, four.
Yeah.
Exact right now it is four volumes, which are all vastly different from one another.
And whenever you say that, because, you know, this one took a long time to compile, and I know that you've already started on the second one, you've already started scoping it out, things like that. And you know, you're probably like me in the fact that you've already got the quadrinity there. Let's just call it.
I like
We'll just come up like with the term, a quadrinity.
Has a ring to it.
That's right. And, you know, you've already come up with the basic theme for each one.
Yes.
Right? Because, I mean, that's what I do. Even whenever I sit down to write an album, like if I track a song and it spurs something, like, I just start going. And frequently I'll have tracks named, like, before I write stuff. And that's kind of how I arrange, you know, things is like, okay, well, that's what I was thinking about. So that's how the music's going to sound now. Tell us some of your process.
No, I was just going to say, like, that's such an important part of an album too, is the order of the tracks. Like, you wouldn't believe how long it took me to you know, like debate with myself about the order of some of these tracks in the album, because it was important for the first song to go into the second.
Yeah.
And then like, it was really important for track four to go into track five, because Three of Wands is the name of the track, and it has this same arpeggio
mm-hmm.
that track five has, but the way that they go into each other is important.
Yeah.
You know, and then the same thing with track five into track six, you know, like it just.
Well, yeah. And it's, you know, it really does take some, well, it takes some production is what
yeah.
it is. That's the producer's job, is to decide yep. like, you know, I think this song should go before that one. It sounds a little bit harsh coming second instead of fifth, you know,
exactly.
things like that. And
that's an overlooked part of putting an album together.
Yeah. Now I'm going to get a little inside baseball with you
yeah.
here, because I, you know me, I'm a very commit to the mix guy, stuff like
yep.
that. You're pretty much inside the box with your recording and everything else. So how commit to the mix are you? How often is it that you're one and done with a track, or that you just, you nail it in a couple of takes?
If I could tell you how many times I redid or re-recorded some of the, like pretty much every track on there, not just
that.
Doubling the tracks, but I mean, like, I didn't like that after I listened to it 12 times.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I ended up re-recording like another guitar track.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't like that bass part. Oh, I got to do that over again.
Yeah.
Oh, that vocal. There's a, you know, at first it sounded good. Now I can't stand it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's part of it too, you know, is going back over your steps and then, you know, putting it together. It takes a long time to be happy with what you have.
Yeah, yeah, especially whenever you've taken as long as you have to put this album together.
Yeah,
you know, you
hopefully the next ones won't take nearly as long.
Well, I mean, some of it was, you know, busting the rust off
yeah.
and stuff like that. Most definitely, not necessarily with playing, but with recording in the process.
Yes,
because
exactly.
there is a process, folks. There is a process to preparation of your space, preparation of your equipment, just even preparation of your mind, even to do this. Good God, like we, believe it or not, even with the technical issues we've had in this episode, which are not on us at all here, this is utterly Skype and stuff like that. It's a danger and a risk that you take. You know, you jump into the deep end with it sometimes like that. But, you know, the first one that we did, I listened back to it and everything was fine when we were recording. But for some reason, like Ian's audio was slightly blown out and I could not treat it. I could not get rid of it. It's one of those
just
that
not
literally
meant to be heard.
Well, if you've ever been in the studio or taken your home recording early on in your recording days to a recordist or to an audio engineer, and they're like, yeah, I can't fix that.
Yeah.
Once it's on tape, it exists, and I don't have a Wayback machine yet. At least not one that works more than like 20 seconds. That's as far back
right.
as I can go. That's it. There's not much I can do unless it was 20 seconds ago. So, what are you looking at as far as distribution for this album and stuff like that? I know that you had some CDs printed and everything else.
Yeah.
Are you still old school in that route? Are you looking at a lot of digital distribution? Tell
no.
us a little bit about how you're looking at getting it out there.
I have it pretty much
everyone.
On Bandcamp right now. Like I
yeah.
have if you want to buy the album, you can.
Yeah.
Or if you want to, you know, buy the download version, you can too. But
yeah.
also, I just want to get it out there. Like with this album, I just want to get the thing out there. So I'm also going to have it on Spotify. So if you don't have means to buy the album, you can always stream it on Spotify after May 12th.
Yeah. Because
that's going to be the date, the release date, quote unquote.
It is the release date, as a matter of fact. It is also the date of this episode. So
nice. Oh.
There you have it. It is actually released on the release
surprise.
Date. How about that? you know, what's it feel like for you? Because I know, like, I've put some of my stuff up. I was recently inspired by the soon-to-be birth of my son.
Yeah,
congratulations. Thank you, my friend. To start archiving my music, my years of being on the radio, like I have tapes of all that stuff. And I want to start digitizing that. And even my music, I want to get it up on the internet. So, because, hey, once it's there, folks, it ain't never, ever, ever disappearing. Like, there will always be some archive of it out there somewhere. I wanted to start archiving all my stuff and getting it together and bringing it together as a cohesive body of work. And for someone who's waited as long as you have to put this baby out, you know, yep. to see it to fruition, what's it feel like for you to finally have it done, to physically be holding CDs in your hand?
Well, I mean, it feels really good. I mean, it's been a long time. I had always thought, I've always been talking about it. And then I think most of the people that I've told about it have been like, yeah, you're working on an album.
Yeah. Okay. Still,
you know what I mean? Like they didn't really, still. It was just all talk, you know? And,
well, after 2 or 3 years, people tend to believe that.
Yeah, exactly. So like, yeah, he's putting an album out sometime. And like,
I'm just doing this job till my album drops.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I would say that, oh, I'm wrapping up the album like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was nowhere close to that because I had actually recorded all the songs that are going to be on the album. And then I sent it to an audio engineer friend of mine who actually ended up mixing and mastering the album.
Okay.
And he's like, here, let me try mixing that because I obviously can't mix myself. So yeah. I sent it to someone who can.
Yeah. No.
I can record the parts. I can play the instruments, but I cannot mix.
I've become the same way, Ian. And it's interesting that you say that because I have decided this late in my musical career, like 20 years into it, that somebody else needs to have hands on my music.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even like my 20-minute long pieces and stuff like that. Like, hey, maybe we don't need a whole 20 minutes of that guitar track.
They can bring out certain frequencies.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, well, this is laying over this low frequency. Why don't we turn the mids down and that? You know, well, just things like that.
Tell us a little bit about that process of release for you, because it's not an easy decision to make, folks. It's not.
Well, you mean just like the releasing the album, or do you mean?
Well, the whole process of deciding to let somebody else mix it.
Right.
It's one thing to let somebody else master it, but to let somebody else mix it.
Yeah, it was kind of, this guy lives in Connecticut. So it was very much an online and by email and by text message. Like, so he'd sure. send me a mix and I'd be like, oh, can you turn the guitars up? Because I want the guitars to shine, you know, this part. Vocals don't have to be as in front. So it was a lot of going back and forth of like, the drums sound a little quiet. Can you bring up that bass drum hit? You know, can you, you know, make that guitar shine through here? Because,
yeah.
you know, he knows all the technical and the engineering aspects of making that happen. So that was awesome. I was glad to get myself out of the way and let someone who knows about the science behind engineering audio.
Yeah. Yeah. And I couldn't put it a better way than to say to get yourself out of the way.
Yeah.
And it's not saying that you aren't talented people. It's not saying that, you know, Ian's denying his talent, his ear or anything like that. It's just he's admitting the fact that he could be better and a whole lot better. And he knows people that are better. So why not give it to them?
Yeah. Let someone who knows how to do that part, do that part of it.
Well, and you'd be interested to see what somebody else's take on your material is as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, now granted, frequently it's not a case like for me, it's the case of, you know, hey, I made this 20-minute piece of music. Feel free to bring guitar in and out whenever you want. But there's 20 minutes of each one of these instruments.
Yep.
So to listen to all of it at once can be a bit of a cacophony sometimes. But to bring things in, bring things out, put a verb on here and there, take the verb out, it changes the mix. It changes the spatiality. It changes the entire way that the palette of sound hits your ears and your brain. Now, as we wrap up the episode here, Ian, tell people one more time where they can go to find the music, where they can go for your social media, all that kind of stuff, bud.
Yeah. Well, you can go to my Facebook page, which is obviously Facebook, and that's and this is where it gets difficult because it's EJINN.music. So it's a little bit different than the Bandcamp.
Yeah, that's difficult.
gin.bandcamp.com. So so that's a little mix up there. So try to get that straight. So egin.music on, and that's Facebook. And then I have the Bandcamp, which is e-gin.bandcamp.com. And then what else? It's going to be on Spotify at some point as well. So I'll have that after May 12th. You can probably search for it on Spotify. And
Nice. And, you know, I can't thank you enough for coming on, being a guest on the show. I have loved your music for years, and the way that you sculpt your art, the way that you take your time with it, and the love and care that you put into tracks.
Thanks, man.
Just from the moment of conception through composition to recording and engineering, you take time with it and you take the steps with it. I remember some of the stuff that y'all were doing for the, I can't even remember the name of the Project 7 EP now.
Phase 4.
Yeah.
That was five songs.
That was it. Because the first one was self-titled, so it was just TP7. But, yeah, I mean, just, oh, my God, the scope and the vision that it has. And that's what I would have to say that I love most about your music, is the fact that there is vision there. There is a belief in what you're doing and a definition of your own success on your terms. And that's what we're all about on this show. That's what we're all about on Dudes and Beer. You know, that's what life should be about, is success on your terms. That too many times we let people push us down in what we're trying to do, instead of listening to ourselves. So,
couldn't have put that better myself.
Thank you, buddy.
That's absolutely right.
on that note, ladies and gentlemen, while you're online supporting Ian, checking out his music, once again, e-gin.bandcamp.com is where you can go to buy the album. While you're online checking that out, please, 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 if you like what we do here on TalkingSoundShow.com, stop on by our Patreon page and support us. It's through viewers like you, listeners like you, that we are able to afford the HD studio, that we're able to afford the hosting platforms that we have, that we're able to afford the website hosting that we maintain, all that kind of stuff. We charge plumb nickel one for any of this. We also have the industry news section there. If you're not into the show or the podcast, there's just all kinds of industry news, from audio to video to graphics to, you know, there's also a free software section where you can go and find free downloads of plugins and programs. And there is also the freelance AV page. And that's probably one of my favorite things, is paying it forward to my fellow engineers. You know, it's so hard whenever you're moving around the country, bopping around, things like that, to actually be able to land a job. You know, it's tough. It's scary. Even can ask Ian, whenever I had to move home from Maine, it was literally like a week later, see you guys.
And no, I was surprised. Gone. I was like, where did he go?
And I had to find gigs, you know, like I had to support myself. I made the freelance AV page. You can go there, you can look over regions, look into states, break it down into cities, and it takes you straight to the hire page of different companies that hire freelance audio video technicians. So while you're online, make sure to check all those things out. Once again, everybody, I am Chris Jordan, your host. This has been Ian, our guest. Thank you so much, Ian, for coming by. Thank you so much for being on.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And until next time, everybody, remember, keep reaching for 11. We'll talk at you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Talking Sound.